I put into his hand a £5 note. Without waiting to hear more, I left the kitchen. In passing the door of that sanctum some time after, I caught the words,
"She'll up and do better for him nor any at grand ladies."
And again,
"If she bean't one of the handsomest, she's known fall, and very good-natured. And in his e'en, she's fair beautiful. Anybody may see that."
I wrote to Moorhouse and to Cambridge immediately to say what I had done, fully explaining also why I had thus acted. Diana and Mary approved the step unreservedly. Diana announced that she would just give me time to get over the honeymoon, and then she would come and see me.
"She had better not wait till then, Jane,"
said Mr. Rochester, when I read her letter to him.
"If she does, she will be too late, for our honeymoon will shine our life long. Its beams will only fade over your grave or mine."
How St. John received the news, I don't know. He never answered the letter in which I communicated it. Yet 6 months after, he wrote to me, without, however, mentioning Mr. Rochester's name or alluding to my marriage. His letter was then calm, and though very serious, kind. He has maintained a regular, though not frequent, correspondence ever since. He hopes I am happy, and trusts I am not of those who lives without God in the world, and only mind earthly things. You have not quite forgotten little Adele, have you, reader?
I had not.
I soon asked and obtained leave of Mr. Rochester to go and see her at the school where he had placed her. Her frantic joy at beholding me again moved me much. She looked pale and thin. She said she was not happy. I found the rules of the establishment were too strict, its course of study too severe for a child of her age. I took her home with me. I meant to become her governess once more, but I soon found this impracticable. My time and cares were now required by another. My husband needed them all.